I have to share with you something very exciting that I'm working on. But let me first start with this. With the amount of spam, hard push by salespeople, cookie cutter marketing techniques, and on the other hand, availability of information and reviews over the internet, current sales techniques simply don't work anymore. The current sales techniques are formula, algorithm, and script-based, and they assume that all the customers and all the industries are the same. And customers are desensitized to them, so they don't work anymore. The only thing that would differentiate you is if they trust you, especially now. Which brings me to the exciting project that I'm working on. It's called Trust Premium. In short, I found that customers will not only choose to buy from a salesperson they feel they can trust over someone they don't, but they're willing to pay a premium for that trust. In other words, they're willing to pay a higher price simply because they trust you more than the other. I did a small survey a few years ago that put that premium at about 29.6%. About. Now, imagine your net profit is 20% of the product's sell price. Now imagine that you could increase your price by 29.6% without changing anything in the cost structure. In fact, without changing anything other than ensuring the customers trust you or your salespeople. This will increase your net profit by 150%. Let me say this again. Your net profits will be 2.5 times higher simply because they trust you more than the competition. Is that interesting? So, I just launched a major research project with tools, assessments, training, processes, a new website, a new trademark, and a lot more. But I want to acknowledge a good friend of mine, Mark Hunter, the sales hunter, who planted this idea in my head over lunch. We were brainstorming over lunch a couple of months ago. Welcome to season 11 of The Trust Show. I'm opening it with a bang. I'll tell you a lot more right after this. Welcome to The Trust Show. I'm Yoram Solomon, your host, the author of The Book of Trust, and facilitator of the Trust Habits Workshop. My mission is simple. I want to help you form habits that build your trustworthiness, because the answer to this question will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? Okay, I'm excited. But first, I have to tell you that a few of the things I'm going to say, at least now at the beginning, are a repeat from season 10, episode 8. And a lot has changed over the last 2 months since I recorded that episode. So bear with me. I want to set it up with some of the data that I included back then. So first of all, I mentioned a few years ago, I did the first survey that I did was really asking what is the most important quality for you or any person who participated in that survey. What is the quality that's most important to them in other people? And on average, well, number one was trustworthiness, and on average, it was 61.2%. So on average, across the six different roles that I asked about, people said 61.2% of the people said that trustworthiness is number one. The highest was actually for salespeople, because 77.4% of the people, when asked about salespeople, said that the number one quality is trustworthiness for them in that salesperson. So, you know, I decided at that point to kind of ask people to put their money where their mouth is, and I did a second survey. In the second survey, I gave a scenario. Now, the scenario was around a remodeling project estimated at about $10,000 in your house, and I asked, you know, I provided, in that scenario, I provided description of two salespeople. One that had all the characteristics of highly trusted. The other had all the characteristics of not trusted. And really kind of, I would even say the average. salesperson. No, not that the average salesperson is not trusted, but the average salesperson. So not as trusted as the first one. And then I asked if both came in with a proposal for exactly the same amount, exactly the same work, which one would you choose? You know, people thought this was a trick question. It wasn't a trick question, but 100% really chose the trustworthy one, which, you know, makes sense. And, you know, the two coming in, offering you exactly the same product or service, and for exactly the same price, and you trust one of them, you don't trust the other as much, who would you choose? Obviously, you're going to choose number one. Well, what if the trusted one asked for 10% higher price? I still had 100% of the people choosing that one, the trustworthy one, even at 10%. So we've already established the trust premium at definitely at 10%. But to me, the trust premium is when it hits 50% probability. So when do we get to the point where people say, well, I'm right there in the middle? So I kept on asking, how about 20%? At 20%, I think I had about 58% said, we're still going with that one. About, 40% said, not sure anymore. And then a few at the end said, we're going to choose the second one. And even fewer said, we're not going to choose any of them. So it's still split between them, dramatically heavy in favor of the trustworthy one. Then I asked about 50% higher price. 50% higher price. Still had over 20% who said we're going to go with the trustworthy one. So the trustworthy one could charge $15,000. And I was very clear that 50% means $50,000. Even at $15,000 from the trustworthy one versus $10,000 from the other salesperson, you would still take the trustworthy one. Now, I took all of this in combination and through a formula, I got to this number, 29.6% I mentioned before. So on average, people are willing to pay 29.6% higher price in the construction industry for a remodeling project worth about $10,000. And I need to emphasize this and you'll see in the future, later, you'll see why. Now, I started charting this graph where I said, let's see how the premium really behaves. The premium and the probability. So there are two things here we need to keep in mind. One of them is the probability they're going to buy from you, and the other is the premium. So we're going to start, our starting point is average trustworthiness, same price. So two salespeople or two professionals, because this applies to professionals selling their services. So think photographers, financial advisors, people who are selling something, a service or a product. So we're starting at average trustworthiness. They're both equal, both at the average, both offering the same price. What's the probability of purchase? 50% each one, right? There's no other data that would prefer one over the other. What's the premium to buy from one versus the other? Zero. Because nobody is better than the other. I mean, as soon as one of them offers or asks for a dollar more, they probably just lost the business. But as the level of trust starts going up for one of them over the other, we're leaving the other as average and the same price. As the level of trust starts going up, at the same price, the probability goes up until it reaches 100%. Now, my guess is it goes up pretty quickly because even if there is a little reason for you to trust one of them over the other, then why not buy from that one instead of the other? By the way, I haven't validated that yet, and this is part of the project that I'm working on, and I'll tell you more about this project specifically a little later in this episode. Now, let's look for something else. Let's look for keeping it at 50% probability. So now, trust is going up. It's already favoring one, but that person also raises the price, charges a trust premium. So at what point, you know, if you trust one of them, trust is high, you don't trust the other one as much, You're favoring the first one, but because they're raising their price, the probability is starting to go down until it hits 50%. So staying at 50%, what is that trust premium? Is it 29.6%, which is what I found before? We'll see. We'll see through this research, and I'll tell you what affects it. Now, let's look at the opposite of it. What happens when the trustworthiness, or the level of trust, I should say the level of trust that I have in one of them, starts going down? At the same price, the probability goes down until it reaches 0%. My guess, it happens very, very quickly. So if there is a reason for you to know that you should distrust one of them more than the other, even by a little, there's absolutely no reason for you to buy from this one. So you're going straight to 0% probability I'm going to buy from this one, which brings it to 100% to the other one. Premium is going to be negative, which means that you need to provide a discount from this moment on. The decline is faster. That's my guess. So the premium is going to, or the discount you're going to have to provide. By the way, did you know that the English language does not have an antonym, an opposite for the word premium? I looked for it. There is no negative premium. So we're just going to call it negative premium. The decline is going to be faster. I mean, I'm guessing that this follows some of the research that I found before, personally, and through things like the Losada ratio, the prospect theory, and other research was done before me that says we respond worse to negative things than better to positive things. This is the same reason why we are much more likely to post a negative review if we had a negative experience than to post a positive review if we had a positive experience. So if that's true, the decline is going to be faster. Now, I think that if they're asking for the same price and one of them is less trustworthy, that decline, I mean, it probably goes to zero like immediately. But if it's not, if the price is actually discounted by the one you trust less, now it's a decline in the probability that we're going to buy, or the negative premium probably happens faster as trust goes down or distrust goes up, on the other hand. So I do want to mention that, again, I want to kind of summarize it and say that there is a trust premium and there is a distrust negative premium, unpremium. I don't know if I can call it an unpremium. The more distrust we have, the lower the probability. The more distrust we have, the bigger discount you have to provide. Theoretically, trustworthiness translates into trust. So if the salesperson or the professional are more trustworthy, then we trust them more. Theoretically, that trust translates directly into a very specific premium or probability of purchase or a combination thereof. However, there are factors that are affecting this. And there are several types of factors, and I created a very nice graphic that will be on the website and in future presentations I'm going to make. And it actually drives the research that I'm doing. There are several factors that would affect it. And I kind of count four types of factors. One is the industry context. There are things that are different between one industry and another. There's actually even within an industry. And those factors would affect both translations, by the way, both translations of trustworthiness into trust, as well as the translation and even our what's important in trustworthiness. And then the translation of that trust into a premium and or probability. The second type is the personal context. So now it's different customers. Different customers may have different personal context. They have different trustfulness. Remember trust law number 8, the level of trust that a customer has in a salesperson is the product not only of the salesperson's trustworthiness, but also that customer's trustfulness, their willingness to trust people in general, salespeople in particular, this salespeople or professional in this industry in even more particular. The third one is the transferability. So Is there a transferability of trust? There are factors that affect transferability of trust. This takes us to trust law number 5. If I trust you, you trust that salesperson, I may trust that salesperson. Now, we'll talk about who you are in this context. And then the fourth one are the consequences. What are the consequences of making the wrong decision? So this really plays a major role in the transfer or translation of the level of trust into a specific premium. It obviously depends on the severity of the consequences and other things associated with the conferences. Those are all different by different industries. And as I said, even within industries. And I'll give a few examples. So let's start with the first one. There are things that are inherent to different markets and different industries that are different between industries and between markets. So here's a few examples, and my research includes those components and then a few more and in more detail. So one, for example, is does the salesperson or professional have a key stake in the results, in getting the business, in getting the deal? Do they own the business? I mean, we tend to trust people who own the business, they are the owner of the business, more than people who work for the owners of the business and are not as invested in the business. The effect that the salesperson has on the result that I'm getting. So sometimes you deal with the salesperson, but then you know that other people will provide the service, the installation, the support. Other people will be the point of contact, at which point the trust or the trust that we have in a salesperson, for example, would play a smaller role. Is the pricing standard? Are the products commodities? Are there alternatives to these products that I can get from others? Obviously, if the pricing is non-standard, that price might play a bigger role than trust. If the prices are not standard, if the prices are standard, if there are no alternatives, obviously the trustworthiness will play a smaller role because you're going to focus on the product itself. How about the product and the service features? How important are they? Risk reduction. Is there any risk reduction built into it? Because if something can reduce the risk, then I need less trust. I don't need as much trust because I have other ways to reduce that risk. Like I can pay later. There is a money-back guarantee. There is a warranty. I can try the product. The free trial. Things like that reduce the risk. And if they reduce the risk, then I don't need as much trust to get over my risk, tolerance bar. Is this a long-term or a transaction-type business? If this is a transaction-type business, then maybe trustworthiness is not that important. Maybe I need to focus on other ways to compensate for the risk. Is it an important relationship? Is this relationship going to be easy to switch out of? So let's say that later down the road, I realize that I made a mistake. How hard is it to get out of it? So those are different, but they are in the context of market and industry. So different markets, different industries have different characteristics in those categories. Next group is the personal context. This is me, the customer, my trustfulness. So first of all is information availability. Is there information available? Now, we can argue that this fits into the industry and market characteristics. Some markets have more information, some have less. But I'm combining that with there's not only information available, but there's my knowledge and the research and the experience that I have in actually going after that information, getting access to that information. Another part is my assessment of the complexity of what I'm trying to buy. Is it so complex that I need to trust the salesperson more, or is it so simple that I don't need to trust them very much? I can figure it out for myself if what I'm buying is the right thing or not. My knowledge of what the prices should be. You know, they just came up with a price. How much do I know what the price should be? The less I know how much the price should be, the more I need to trust the salesperson and give a premium based on that. Am I a risk taker or an early adopter of new products, new technologies? Am I willing to take more risk? The more risk I'm willing to take, the less I need to trust a salesperson. The less risk I'm willing to take, the more I need to trust them. Am I a person, this goes now to my trustfulness, am I a person that trusts people in general? Do I trust this kind of profession? So let's say financial advisors or photographers. Do I, in general, trust them? And obviously, it's based on my experience. We are the sum of our experiences. Do I trust the brand? So this is especially when what you have is not someone who is the business, but someone who represents a business. The next group is transferability. So remember, trust law number 5, I trust you, you trust the salesperson, then I trust the salesperson. But transferability can take multiple shapes, different shapes. So first, are there reviews that are available? Are there a lot of reviews that are available by people that I don't know? Do I trust them? So now we're talking about the quantity of reviews or transferable trust. Then there are personal recommendations. This is less about quantity, more about quality. So this is when I ask someone I know or I get a recommendation from someone I know. And I have to admit, often that's what I do. You know, I don't trust the person or people who are offering me the services. And therefore, I'm asking people I know, who do you recommend to do a pool remodeling, for example? So personal recommendations, more quality, less quantity. How about references that the service provider, the professional, the salesperson has offered and whether they checked out or not? So those are all affecting the transferability. Again, you know, we can argue that reviews are more kind of industry market related versus, you know, standing on their own because they're different between market and market. But it really doesn't matter. The categorization doesn't matter. What matters is what we end up in terms of premium and willingness to switch. Next, and this is a big one, are the consequences of making the wrong decision. So what would happen if I chose one and it turns out that I chose the wrong decision, that I made the wrong decision? So the first question is, now those consequences can be monetary or otherwise. You know, so take, for example, you know, an investment advisor. What's the risk? The risk is that I lost money. Think about a surgeon. What's the risk? The risk is that I lost my life, and even worse, I lost the life of someone I care about. So the consequences don't have to be monetary. How significant are they? So for example, let's take photographers. And just so that you don't think that something like photographers is a unified market, it's not. Because if you take a studio or headshot photographer versus an event or let's say a wedding photographer, okay? So what's the worst thing that can happen? What are the negative consequences of making a mistake by choosing the wrong studio photographer? So we're doing a photo shoot. I'm spending a couple of hours. They take photos or headshots. Then they send them to me and I look at them and I go, well, that's crap. I can't use that. Well, what are the consequences? Well, I lost money. I lost time. Both time where I was at the studio and time where I really needed those pictures and now I don't have them. But that's it. Those are the consequences. How am I going to fix it? Well, I'm obviously not going to go to the same person. I'm going to go to another person, another photographer, studio or headshot photographer. And that's it. How about a wedding photographer, an event photographer? You know, I'm marrying my daughter. Not really, but hypothetically. I'm marrying my daughter and I'm hiring a wedding photographer. And I get the pictures, and they're crap. That wedding is not happening again, hopefully. So that those consequences are a lot higher. And by the way, even if the cost was exactly the same, the consequences are still going to be higher here. So it's not just about the money. Now, the next component of consequences, how easy it is for me to know that I made a wrong choice. Or, you know, in adopting new technologies, the term is observability. Can I observe and know that I'm making the wrong choice? And combined with that is how easy it is to stop it and correct it. You know, you can, if there is a process where early on you can tell this is not going in the right direction, I'm going to stop it now, minimize the damages, the consequences, and correct it. How hard is it? How easy is it? And finally, how significant is the benefit and the reward if I did make the right choice? Because that would have an impact as well. How significant are the benefits and their rewards? At least I think it's going to have a significant impact. Over the years, I developed my relative trust model, right? And it has six components. Those components are competence, personality, compatibility, symmetry, positivity, that's made of no BS and empathy, and then time and intimacy. So there are six components there, seven with the subcomponents. Now the question is, do they translate into trustworthiness exactly the same way for different industries, different markets, different types of relationships? And I'm going to assume that they're not. So, you know, my relative trust model is made of six components in two groups. One group is who you are. What do I know about you before the sales pitch, before you ever came in and pitched to me? What you do is what you do during the sales pitch. What's unique about my model is, first of all, that it assumes that trust is relative, which addresses the first point that I made when I opened this episode. And that is, not all customers are the same. And you have to treat them differently. Not all markets are the same. Techniques would not work the same way in different markets. The second thing that's unique here is that trustworthiness is not enough for trust. You still need to have the trustfulness, which once again says that this is about the customer, a specific customer. The third thing, there is another one that really doesn't relate here. It relates more into organization, so I'm not going to mention it. But the third one here is that in order to change something, you have to build new habits, to form new habits. And I'll talk more about that when I talk about the process. So I'm assuming, thinking about it enough, that even those six components are not going to translate into trustworthiness exactly the same way, which is why they're part of my research, how the different factors affect the different trustworthiness components in translating it into trustworthiness and then trust. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start my research, and I'll talk more about the research in the next segment. But the research is going to apply to different types of relationships, different markets, which I guess will provide different premiums and different factors and different importance of the different factors. I'll talk about B2C, or I'll research B2C, businesses to customers, and I'll do B2B, businesses to businesses. So in the B2C space, photographers, I gave as an example photographers, and even then you can break them into event photographers versus studio photographers, commercial photographers, artistic photographers, and so on, financial advisors, insurance agents, car salespeople. You know, we talk about used car salespeople as the lowest form of salespeople. Well, it's a stigma, and we can fix it. Once we understand that market segment, furniture salespeople, appliance salespeople, maybe the same. One important thing, by the way, is the cost of a transaction in each one of them. That's another thing. Consultant, executive coaches, personal life coaches, home pool renovation, roofing, foundation repair, accountants in the B2B space, semiconductor sales, software, things that you only sell to other businesses. So there are a lot of businesses, and over time, I'm going to cover more of them. But more importantly is I'm going to attach that research to specific customers of mine that need that research and need to improve their own performance. And I'll talk about that. Let's talk about the research I'm about to embark. There is a long story I can tell you here, but I'm going to respect your time, not tell you the entire story. I can just give you the bottom line. When I was working on my PhD research, I bothered to take every single freaking research class the university had to offer. This is why I never got a specialization in leadership or education or anything else with my PhD in organization and management. And the only thing I would probably qualify for, if they had that, was research. I did every qualitative, quantitative, and I am so happy that I did that because this gives me the tools that I need today to do this research, not to mention the research I've done ever since I completed my dissertation and got my degree in 2010. So the first step that I did was looking for prior research. You don't want to reinvent the wheel. You want to understand what was done before. So what I did was, as a professor, I have access to the digital library, and I started researching articles related to trust and sales. Now, typically when what you're looking for, and this is, there are a lot of databases, a lot of journals, and typically when you look for such broad terms such as trust and sales being in the title or the description, it's going to come up with like tens of thousands of articles. I mean, there are millions and millions of articles in those databases, probably more. So I was ready to be overwhelmed with tens of thousands of articles, which is typically what happens when you start with such broad terms, such as trust and sales. 24 articles. That's it. 24 articles came up that have the words trust and sales or any combination or any derivatives of those words in the title and or the description. The latest one was from 2008. The earliest one was from 1916. This is before the U.S. ever entered World War I. Okay? Just to give you context. 24 articles. So obviously, instead of trying to narrow down, I started expanding it to look for articles that were based on the or cited these articles and other articles and so on. I could not find any prior quantification of the trust premium. None. I found research. I found meta research that looked at different researches done before to try and see what the components are. Nobody ever quantified it. Not even as much as I did back in, 5 years ago or so when I came up with the number 29.6%. Apparently, I was the only person who did that. There is no such assessment tool. So what am I going to do in this research? The first of all, what I've done is develop a survey tool. The survey tool is right now in what I would call pilot study. So I'm actually doing it in person, interviewing people, taking them through the survey tool, asking the questions, modifying the questions a little until I get to a final survey tool. I've already contracted a company that has a reliable, credible panel, which are people who fill surveys on a regular basis. They actually get paid. But when I say credible, it's not that they just picked up somebody off the street, which is what I would do if I just reached out to people. But they actually have people that consistently were reliable in answering surveys and took it seriously. So I contracted a company and we're going to get this to probably initially about 200 people. And we're going to get the results for one industry, one type of relationship. Then I'm going to continue and start getting more statistics for different industries because it will do several things. One is it will show me that how different customer demographics will act differently. It will show me how different characteristics that are different between industries would affect, remember, the translation between trustworthiness and trust and between trust and premium. So, you know, for example, different demographics, how they have an effect. Just think about the income level as a demographic when you hire a financial advisor. Would that affect the level of trust or the level of premium you're willing to give? I bet it does. And here's the big deal. Right after I'm done with this first evaluation and testing of that survey tool, I'm starting to offer a service. So let me tell you about this service. It has several parts, and this is going to be all in the website that should be ready by November. First step, let's say that you have a company, you're a salesperson, you're a service provider, whatever, you are trying to get a trust premium. The first thing we do is we identify your customer demographics. So what are the demographics that I need to go after when I use a panel for your industry, for your specific service? Then I'm going to do the panel. Now, we need to keep in mind that there are three components that play here. One is the confidence level, which typically sits at 95%. So I'm 95% sure that the results I'm getting represent the entire population. Then there is the error margin. So when I tell you that it's 29%, it's plus minus what? And it's recommended to keep it between 2 and 7%. Like, for example, we have a huge population for pretty much everything. I mean, when we go, I think, beyond 10,000 people in the population, the numbers don't change anymore for error margin. So let's just say that it's a huge population. If we only survey 100 people, we have a 10% error margin, which is a little high. If we survey 200 people, we're going to have 7%, 300 people, 6%, 500, 4%, 1,000, 3%, 2,000, 2%. I don't recommend going, and I'm not the only one, not recommending going below 2% error margin. Now, of course, what we can do is say we don't want 95% probability, 95% confidence level. We want 99% confidence level, which would take 2,000 people to 3% error margin. I know I gave you too much here. All I'm trying to say is there are three things: confidence level, the error margin we're willing to take, and both of those will dictate the price that I will be charged by the panel company. And I will pass along to you. So now we're doing a panel survey. What we're going to find out is what is the maximum premium for being trustworthy for that demographic. So we identified the demographic. We know what your industry is. I ran the panel. As a result, I'm getting what is the maximum premium that people are willing to pay when they hire a trustworthy salesperson versus the average one. We're going to find out what affects it. What are the components that affect it? Whether they're industry related, whether they're personality related, and especially as they relate to trustworthiness. So once we identify that, first of all, we may come up with, you know what, there's no premium in your industry. Don't worry about it. I'm going to guess we probably are never going to find that. But we may find you're going to say, well, you know, the premium is only 10%. I don't want to work too hard for 10%, which, you know, I don't think is smart, but that's your decision. Then we're going to find out what are the trustworthiness components that in your industry with this panel have the biggest impact on the premium. And we may identify sub-demographics within that group where you might get a better premium. That might help you focus your efforts on maybe a subsection of your customers. You know, if my customers today are all the VPs of sales, they're like hundreds of thousands of you, if not more. What if I could identify a group that would have a bigger impact for me, or a bigger impact on the premium, whatever characteristics we have for them? So that's what we're going to find out. Now, the next thing is, we get the premium, we know what the premium is. The next thing we want to do is we're going to send the assessment tool, which is very similar to the survey tool, with the exception of in the trustworthiness components, the questions are not going to be how important or what is the impact of a certain characteristic on the premium. The question will be, how would you rank that salesperson in that component? And again, they're you know, I'm not just going to ask how are you going to rank their competence. I'm actually going to ask specific questions. So now we know how important it is. We know what the impact on the trust premium is. Now we can assess your salespeople. We can do it generally. We can do it per salesperson. So this time, we're not sending it to a panel. We're actually selling it to your current and maybe prospective customers. But this time, you're going to be the one sending it. I'm going to be the one getting the answers. We're going to find what your margin could be. We're going to find out how it could be improved. And that leads to the final stage, which is we're going to develop and deliver customized trust habits training program. Trust Habits is my system to form new habits that will change old behaviors, that will build trust, and in your case, generate a trust premium. So we're going to, you know, instead of hitting all of the possible characteristics, we're going to go with the 80-20 rule. We're going to identify where is the biggest impact, and that's what we're going to work on. So four stages. The first one is I'm doing a panel survey to find out the characteristics of your specific industry and your specific target segment, customer segment. We're going to find out what the premium is, what affects it. We're going to send an assessment tool to your customers and prospective customers to see where you rank. And we're going to develop and deliver a customized trust habits training program just for you. Again, my expectation is that the availability is going to be around November, this November, November 2023. So keep checking trustinsales.com. That's the website. Right now it's going to say that it's under development, under construction, trustinsales.com. Or you can reach out to me at Yoram@trustinsales.com. As you can tell, I'm very excited about this project. I've been working on it for the last 2-3 months. You'll hear more soon. Just to summarize, the value to you is you get to learn what trust premium is in your industry. It would help you segment your customers better to get those who value your services more than others. It will help identify how your salesperson, your sales force, or yourself, if you're the one selling, how you're doing relative to this industry. It will identify what you can do to improve your trust premium such that you can increase the probability that customers will buy from you and the price premium that they're willing to pay because they trust you. And then we're going to train you. Until next week, may trust be with you. This is The Trust Show. What would you like to know about trust and trustworthiness? Let me know and I'll answer it in a future episode. I would love to hear from you. Email me at Yoram@thetrustshow.com. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show so you will automatically get notified when I release a new episode. Rate it. Write a review for this podcast because those ratings help not only you, but also others looking for podcasts just like this. If you're looking for more resources to learn about how to build trust, be trusted, or know who to trust, look up my workshops, online courses, books, or go to my website, trusthabits.com. And remember that the answer to these two questions will have the biggest impact on your personal and professional success or failure. Can I trust you? And can you trust me? Thank you for listening or watching The Trust Show.